It was a few minutes past midnight on a Friday when guests fled a hotel and casino complex after gunshots were heard and a fire started to spread inside. While no one was directly injured by the shooting, there were dozens of casualties caused by toxic fume inhalation. The source of the gunfire was a lone shooter, and many initially thought that the attack was an act of terrorism. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify with new episodes out every Friday. This is the story of the Resorts World Manila attack committed in 2017 by a man named Jesse Carlos. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. Before City of Dreams Manila and Solaire Resort and Casino came along, there was Resorts World Manila, the very first integrated resort and casino in the Philippines. It was opened in 2009 by the Travelers International Hotel Group and is a joint venture with the Alliance Global Group in Genting, Hong Kong. Located in Newport City, Pasay, opposite Terminal 3 of the Ninoy Aquino International Airport, Resorts World Manila is home to multiple hotel brands such as the Marriott, Holiday Inn, Savoy, Hilton, and Sheraton. It boasts having over 50 restaurants, bars, and lounges, as well as the House Manila Nightclub, Newport Mall, Newport Cinemas, and Newport Performing Arts Theater. Gambling, however, is what most people usually go to Resorts World Manila for. It has gambling spaces available in many areas, with a total gaming space of 30,000 square meters, or 323,000 square feet, and its main casino, with three floors full of table games and slot machines, is the biggest gambling area of them all. It was there that on June 2, 2017, at 12:07 a.m., a masked man entered, wearing an ammunition vest and a backpack, bypassing a metal detector and security personnel who tried to stop him too late when they saw him carrying an assault rifle. He walked past the Tao Yuan restaurant, ignoring a security guard who was chasing him. Once he was at the Prosperity Lounge, he fired his rifle into the air, causing panic among the patrons. Then he doused poker tables and slot machine chairs with petrol and ignited them all with a lighter. At 12:18 a.m., as fire and police teams who had arrived assisted guests in evacuating, the man headed to the casino cashier area and, after several attempts, forced the security doors open and took with him 113.1 million pesos or around 2.26 million US dollars worth of high denomination gambling chips. Police and security personnel couldn't locate him for a while due to the chaos of guests and employees rushing out of the casino, but at 1:10 a.m., a police team exchanged fire with him as he left the building through a fire exit. One of the SWAT units who had arrived then also exchanged fire with him, so he went back inside and up the stairwell to avoid the police units behind him. At 1:44 a.m., police and security personnel inside the second floor CCTV room spotted the gunman roaming around an unidentified floor of Maxim's hotel. A few minutes later, he was seen shooting open the door of room 510 and lighting a fire in the hallway with some linen from the hotel room. With his location finally identified, police personnel were dispatched to arrest him. As more fire and police units arrived and the search for trapped civilians continued, six teams from the Philippine National Police Special Action Force cleared the 4th, 5th, and 6th floors of the hotel. At 3:15 a.m., they finally entered room 510, which by then was already burning with toxic fumes, but the suspect was nowhere in sight. At 6:20 a.m., despite the police not finding anything inside room 510 3 hours earlier, the suspect's charred remains were found inside the burned hotel room by police and Resorts World Manila's security. Police, fire, and other rescue units continued the search for civilians, and at 11 a.m., it was determined that 38 people had been killed in the attack, with 37 of them dying of toxic fume inhalation. The 38th death was of the gunman himself, who had apparently set himself on fire before shooting himself in the head. PNP Director General Ronald Bato de la Rosa issued official statements soon after the attack, describing it as perpetrated by a single shooter whose motive was to steal chips from Resorts World Manila's casino by distracting guests and employees with warning shots and fire. While no one was directly injured by the gunfire, the burning stuffing of casino furniture produced poisonous smoke that led to the deaths of 37 people, with 13 of them being casino employees. The casualties were mostly women whose bodies were discovered in the casino's hallways and one of the bathrooms, and among them were Eleuterio Briones, husband of local actress Zenith Briones, Elizabeth Panlillo Gonzalez, wife of Pampanga representative Aurelio D. Gonzalez Jr., and a South Korean man who suffered a fatal heart attack. 70 people were injured by the smoke and stampede, with one security guard accidentally shooting himself due to panic. Many of them resorted to breaking the locked windows and jumping from the second floor to escape. The gunman's bag that contained the stolen chips was recovered inside a toilet, and his blood samples were collected from the stairwell that led up to Maxim's hotel. His firearms, a Bushmaster M4 assault rifle with a filed-out serial number and a .380mm Tenfolio semi-automatic pistol, were found with his body inside hotel room 510. An autopsy was performed on the gunman's body to discover his identity, but his remains unfortunately had been burned beyond recognition. Police initially thought he was a white male, while others suspected he was affiliated with the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. The latter theory came about during the attack, when a channel on the messaging app Telegram reportedly posted, quote, "The lone wolf soldiers of the Khilafah attacked the heart of Kufar city of Manila in Resorts World," end quote. The attack happening concurrently with the Marawi crisis in Mindanao further fueled speculation that the ISIS-linked forces in that area of the Philippines, such as the Abu Sayyaf and Maute group, might have been behind it. The day after the incident, the Amak News Agency, an ISIS-affiliated news outlet, claimed that the attack was carried out by ISIS, with the group's East Asia division even boasting about the number of Christian deaths they caused. According to Defense Secretary Delfin Lorenzana, while it was easy for the militant group to claim responsibility for the attack, he wasn't ruling out the possibility that it was indeed ISIS. National Capital Region Police Office Chief Director Oscar Albayalde seconded what De La Rosa had said before, that it wasn't an act of terrorism as the shooter didn't aim his rifle at anyone. He contradicted the narrative, though, that robbery was the motive, pointing out that there would have been no way for the gunman to encash the casino chips he had stolen. Albayalde, therefore, was under the impression that the gunman might have been mentally disturbed. Presidential spokesperson Ernesto Abella expressed the government's condolences to the families of the victims. President Rodrigo Duterte apologized for the incident and questioned Resorts World Manila's security measures, particularly the layout of their emergency exits. He ruled out terrorism as a motive behind the incident, specifically the theory that it was ISIS, as according to him, the attack would have been more brutal if they were truly the perpetrators. On June 4, 2017, 3 days after the attack, the NCRPO finally identified the so-called lone wolf gunman, despite Chief Inspector Kimberly Molitas, NCRPO spokesperson, saying on the day of the attack that they had already discovered his identity. He was a 42-year-old Filipino named Jesse Carlos, not a white male and not affiliated with ISIS, though the aforementioned Telegram channel claimed days later that he had converted to Islam 4 months earlier and had informed the Marawi group of his plan 1 week before the attack. Intelligence officials rejected this claim, however, and there were no further claims from ISIS or its affiliates since then. Jesse Javier Carlos was born on April 19, 1975, to Fernando and Teodora Carlos. They were a poor family who lived in a narrow wooden house along an esquinita in Tondo, Manila, before moving to an informal settlement nearby. Teodora hawked baked goods on the street so she could send her children to school, and Jesse Carlos worked odd jobs, driving a jeepney and restoring old furniture, till he eventually got into the Philippine Marine Institute to study custom brokerage. After graduating from college and passing the board exam, Carlos worked for a private company, then landed a job as a tax specialist for the Department of Finance's one-stop-shop Interagency Tax Credit and Duty Drawback Center. Soon, things started looking up, and he married his college sweetheart Jen at the Manila Cathedral in a grand ceremony with 200 guests. He bought a house and lot for his parents when they were evicted from their old place, and the newlyweds moved to a two-story house in Barangay 339, Santa Cruz, Manila, around 3 kilometers or 1.86 miles from Carlos's childhood district of Tondo. Not a far cry in terms of neighborhood conditions, but still an improvement. The couple had 3 children, 2 boys and a girl who went to private school and had private tutors. They had several cars that they and their driver used in rotation, including Carlos's favorite Ford Ranger pickup. Carlos had made it big, but his employers at the Department of Finance noticed he was leading too lavish a lifestyle for the salary they knew he was receiving. In 2011, they were only paying him roughly 15,000 pesos or around $300 a month, but he had declared assets of more than 9 million pesos or around $180,000. The Department of Finance's Revenue Integrity Protection Service then discovered misdeclarations in Carlos's statements of assets, liabilities, and net worth. He was unable to explain the huge disparity between his income and assets, which included a Manila property worth 1.1 million pesos or $22,000 and a 2-hectare farm in Batangas that he acquired in 2010 for 4 million pesos or $80,000. In 2012, the Office of the Ombudsman ordered Carlos to be dismissed from his post, with his retirement benefits forfeited and disqualification from any future post in the government. 3 years later, in 2015, the Office of the Ombudsman filed a civil case against him, with his wife Jen as co-respondent. The investigation on Carlos brought to light his other business ventures, which included a supposedly dormant gun-dealing business, armset trading that existed under his wife's name, and his involvement in the mining business in 2009, when he earned 100,000 pesos or $2,000 monthly as an intermediary during a gold rush in Compostela Valley. The investigation also revealed that Carlos was an avid gambler, betting on cockfights since 2006, and even breeding and selling game fowl on his Batangas farm. He eventually became a high roller casino gambler to repay the debts he had accumulated from cockfighting, but he wasn't always lucky there either, so he resorted to selling his cars and getting various loans involving millions of pesos. In 2016, Carlos sold his farm for half the asking price of 10 million pesos, along with some of the fighting cocks he had reared. He tried to settle the civil case against him for 1.2 million pesos, but the Office of the Ombudsman rejected his offer. The gambling and lengthy legal proceedings had taken a toll on Carlos's relationship with his wife and parents, and in April 2017, just a few days before his birthday, they were forced to have him banned by the Philippine Amusement and Gaming Corporation, or PAGCOR, from entering all casinos. On June 1, 2017, the day before the Resorts World Manila attack, Carlos appeared for another hearing at the Manila Regional Trial Court, Branch 30. Hours later, at around 7 in the evening, he rode a tricycle to SM San Lazaro and rode the same tricycle back home before 9 p.m. He paid the driver his fare and stepped out, but instead of walking to the front door, he stood staring for almost 10 minutes at the house that had his children and the wife he had alienated with his gambling. After Carlos went inside the house, his next definite movement, as captured by CCTV, was at 11:19 p.m. at a local refueling station, where he bought 3 liters of gasoline before taking a cab to the casino. But 2 more security videos discovered by the police would link Carlos to the deaths of 2 men in Paco, Manila, 2 hours before the Resorts World Manila incident. At around 10 that evening, 38-year-old Elmer Mitra Jr. was driving in his car along Paco Park with 43-year-old Alvin Cruzin when gunshots were heard by passersby in the area and the car crashed and flipped over twice. An occupant emerged from the backseat of the wrecked car and walked away limping, leaving Mitra and Cruzin dead inside the vehicle from gunshot wounds in the head. A figure matching the description of the man who escaped from the crash site was captured by CCTV walking to Carlos's house and emerging from there at 11 p.m. in attire and equipment matching what Carlos wore at the casino. 4 9mm casings, 6 bullets, and a 9mm Tanfolio pistol were recovered by the police from the crash site, and bloody cargo pants matching the description in the crash footage was later found in Carlos's house. Forensic analysis was performed on the car wreck, and blood from the cargo pants was sent for DNA testing. But there is no information online as of this recording on whether the DNA test results had already been returned. Police theorized that the man who escaped from the crash site might have met with Mitra and Cruzin because he owed them some money, which was a plausible theory, as Mitra was a lawyer and son of former Pasay City prosecutor Elmer Mitra Sr., while Cruzin was a former Manila police officer who retired to become a casino financier. A police informant linked Carlos to the two men, and a review of the CCTV footage of Carlos alighting from the taxi outside Resorts World Manila showed him walking with a limp. These, with all the other circumstantial evidence, made Carlos the police's only person of interest in the double murder case in Paco, Manila. On June 9, 2017, 7 days after the Resorts World Manila attack, the PNP ordered the security guards posted in the entrances and exits of the casino to be relieved. On the same day, PAGCOR suspended the casino's operating license until the security lapses that had permitted the June 2 attack to happen were rectified, particularly since Carlos had been banned inside all casinos, so he should have been recognized immediately upon entering the building. Resorts World Manila hired a private security consultant called Black Panda to tighten their security measures. The suspension was lifted 3 weeks later on June 29, and the establishment immediately resumed its gambling operations in areas of the casino that weren't affected by the attack. Resorts World Manila recovered most of its visitorship in a short amount of time, but the lives of the injured and the families of the dead, including that of Carlos, would never be the same. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This story was suggested by listener Jessica Manipon by email, and this episode was written, narrated, and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.